Hello and welcome to the Breathwork and Meditation for Success podcast. I'm Derm Corbett and I'm thrilled to be your guide on this incredible journey of self-discovery and transformation through the power of breathwork and meditation. We all face our unique struggles and challenges. My own journey through some pretty deep-seated challenges led me to the profound world of breathwork and meditation. These weren't just practices for me. Breathwork and meditations were actually lifelines to help me navigate through tough times and open doors to a deeper understanding of who I am. In this podcast, each week we'll tackle four key things. First, I'll share a challenge I faced. Then I'll dive into how I use breathwork and meditation to address that challenge. Third, I'll reveal the results and practices that these brought into my life and how I integrated them. Fourth, I'll give you some concrete actionable steps that you can take away for your own journey. Whether you're seeking to find calm amidst the chaos, enhance your mental clarity, grow as a person, or are just curious about these practices and how they can transform your life, this podcast is for you. Join me as we embark on this journey together, discovering the immense power of breathwork and meditation for personal growth and transformation. Hey there. So today we've got an episode that's going to blow your mind in the best way possible. I sat down with the incredible Natasha Ghosh. She's a true expert in the world of breathwork and meditation, holds a master's in psychology, a PhD in psychology rather, and a master's in clinical counseling. She's a registered clinical counselor here in Vancouver, and she was the very first guest on the podcast. And Natasha isn't just any expert, she's a powerhouse of knowledge and experience. And during our conversation, she shared with us how the simple act of breathing can unlock real, tangible change in our lives. It's about way more than just inhaling and exhale. It's about tapping into a well of potential that we all carry within us. We explored how breathwork can shift your perspective, break down barriers, and propel us into a space where transformation isn't just possible, it's inevitable. Natasha walked us through the hows and whys, and trust me, you're going to be hanging on to her every word. Get comfortable, maybe even close your eyes and take a deep breath. We're about to embark on a journey that could very well change the way you see yourself and the world around you. So without further ado, let's go ahead and play the interview with Natasha. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the very first Breathwork and Meditation podcast and our very first interview with Natasha Ghosh. Natasha is very well qualified. She's a PhD, master's, registered clinical counselor, and I believe a hypnosis certified.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's correct.
Let's jump into it then. How did breathwork and meditation become a part of your life?
Yeah, well, I breathe. So there is that to start with. Yeah. But firstly, thank you so much for having me on your podcast. It's a pleasure to be here and to talk about these things. I think they are the foundational pieces of how we live. Mm-hmm. And we've forgotten to think about those things. So in terms of your question and how it became part of my life, like many things in my life, I just sort of fell into it. Mm-hmm. The meditation piece, you know, my parents meditated. They were quite spiritual. They didn't really, you know, I called ourselves holiday Hindus. Like, we'd go to all the main events, but we weren't like going every Sunday to temple. But it really all started when I was going through my own transition and I was finishing off some school and I was having some challenges and I was seeing a therapist. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, this isn't really working for me. Right. So I was speaking to a friend of mine. I was like, you're doing really well. Like, what is happening for you? Okay. And so she recommended the person that she was seeing. And she said to me, she's like, it's not like regular therapy, Natasha. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, sure. And then I started seeing the person she was seeing and we would have these conversations. My friend and I would be like, well, even if you didn't believe in this stuff, mm-hmm. We're seeing change or the advice she gives is pretty good. Yeah. But what I noticed is that in practicing meditation with this particular mentor of mine, it helped to center, ground, and create more capacity to handle and think more clearly about the things that were happening in my life. And then in terms of breath work, so I kept doing that for a while. And then the breath work really happened when I was doing a medicine wheel with the Shamanic Yoga Institute in Squamish. And we were doing some mulching breath. And what I realized is that I was coming into these spaces of almost altered states of consciousness in the same way that people were talking about having experiences in psychedelic experiences. And so that really intrigued me. That, and I mean, if I was totally honest, somebody said to me in like a reading, I see breath in your future. So I was like, all right. Nice. So those two things together sort of had me trying out different kinds of breath work and then kind of settling on a few styles that I like using in my practice and for myself.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can certainly relate to what you were talking about with the psychedelic experience. I went on YouTube and came across a very intense breathing exercise and I did it for like 40 minutes in my old apartment.
Yeah.
And I the meditation itself was quite nice, but then when I got up afterwards, I looked at my sports fitness ball and it was like so I was like, okay, that's a bit weird. It obviously just wore off. Like
Well, in the same way that when you're taking plant medicine, it's changing your physiology, right? You're doing that with your breath too. There's this carbon dioxide oxygen exchange and this off-gassing and this like controlled hyperventilation. And so if anyone's ever had a panic attack or experienced that kind of closing in feeling where you become so focused, like you are activating your fight or flight system. So it makes sense that you're having that experience. But then also it goes away a lot quicker because you're kind of in control in the sense that you can come in and out of it. And so in our breathwork circles, we talk about like leaning in and putting your foot on the gas pedal or putting your foot on the brake. So depending on the kind of experience you want to have.
Yeah. It's so interesting to hear about that kind of stuff because, you know, as I said, it's just like, what's happening? Do you know, why does that happen? What's the physiological reason for those kind of trippy moments?
So again, well, so there's a physiological, but there's also that
spiritual component.
And I think those two things, you can separate them if you want to, but I mean, given that we're on a meditation and breathwork podcast, I don't think we need to. But so as I said, there's that physiological change, right? There's the off-gassing, there's the oxygen, carbon dioxide change, there's extra oxygen that's going through your body. Your monkey mind, that prefrontal cortex, that is the part, the rumination parts, is shutting off. It's transient hypofrontality, the way we learned it. And with that comes the ability to tap into our subconscious minds, or depending on whether you believe in that or not, a different part of your mind. And that allows for other experiences to come into our field that we would normally be closed off to because our conscious mind, our egoic mind, is so forefront trying to protect us, but it's actually holding us back.
Yeah. It reminds me of I don't know if you read this book. It's by, I think it's Dr. Joseph Murphy. He's got a book about the subconscious. I find myself going back and reading it sometimes. It's kind of closely intertwined with what the law of attraction is. And yeah, he's just got so much insight. But one thing I couldn't really understand is, how do you manipulate the subconscious to, I guess, allow yourself to, or allow the space to make those changes? What do you do in a meditation once you've cleared everything and you're not thinking? Do you start thinking again?
A little bit, but I think you're calling in something different. So in a breathwork circle, we'll go through the experience of the somatic release, so that controlled activation of the body, and then you're breathing through all the experiences or the sensations that are coming up. So you're teaching your body that you can come into an activated state and come through it, because we spend a lot of time repressing those feelings and so we never see the other side, so we don't build the trust that we can get through it. We try to avoid the bad feeling. In a breathwork practice that is a conscious connected breathwork practice where you're activating the system, you're then allowing your body to come into that activated state and then come through the other. So you've taught yourself that, so that's one thing. So subconsciously, you now have this belief in yourself that you can come through the other side. But what happens for in our sessions is that at the end of that portion, there will be a few songs before we come into rest where we're actually bringing in the vibration, the frequency, the vision of what we are to be. You know, now that we've cleared this space, what does that mean for who we are and how we want to be? So that's one way to do it. The other way that I do it is in my hypnotherapy practice, where we come into this meditative state, essentially, where your brain is moving from beta into alpha into theta. And because your brain waves have slowed down so much, you're able to, again, access these other parts of your mind, and you're able to allow those other parts to sort of take over, as it will. And that state, whether it's in breathwork or hypnotherapy, you're just more open to suggestion. Right? So then when we're offering suggestions that are actually in support of your growth and development, you know, you're more likely to take those on than if I was just talking to you and saying, you can do it.
You know? So I guess, like, it's all so interesting. So I guess if you're engaged in your monkey mind, I guess when you're trying to learn something and all that is happening, it filters through, and then what you end up is something that's entirely bastardized and unuseful. But what you're saying is you're clearing that to allow for a more suggestive state. That's so interesting.
Like, I think about it as like your conscious mind, and then there's this boundary and your subconscious mind, right? And so normally you say something and it goes through your conscious mind and into that boundary space, and it says, no thanks. No thanks. And
I can almost feel that.
You're like, it's so close. It's right here. Oh, now it's gone. Yeah, you become more open to the suggestion when you move through that process.
Sounds like with great power comes great responsibility. For anyone who showed up and wanted, you know, to engage in hypnosis, it's a very trusting thing, really, I guess.
It really is. And I don't take that lightly, because, you know, I think that there are a lot of facilitators, and some of the things, you know, like coming from this background as a registered clinical therapist, you know, I've done a lot of trauma-informed work. And that's not to say that other facilitators haven't, but I do see a lot of facilitators do what I call bro breathing. And I mean, I do some bro breathing myself. It's how we're going to get to those.
I remember that from your course, actually. Bro breathing.
And that's important. That is important. Like, there is this point where that helps the activation, but the question becomes, how do you learn to attune to your own body and what it needs and what that capacity is? So I've seen facilitators that will push individuals past a capacity. And some people that are participants are like, thank you so much for pushing me past it. I wouldn't. And other people come out going, that was too much. And so in my practice, I'll suggest, but I always also say, it's up to you. I want to give the power back to the individual, because we've outsourced our power so much to other people, like even people that were supposedly are helping us. But truly, it's always in your hands. Like, you are the medicine for yourself.
Wow. It's just, it's so fascinating to hear all that stuff. If you were beginning this, so if you're listening and you've never done breath work or meditation before, what advice, or what would some first steps be for someone like that? What would make sense for them to do?
I mean, really, you guys, try some stuff out. But I do think that, similar to if plant medicine, less is more to start with.
Right.
So if you're unsure, especially if you already have challenges with breath, or you become easily activated, an activating breathwork session may not be helpful for you. And on the other hand, maybe it is, because it allows you to activate and move through it. So I think it really is, then, whatever you try, is to stay attuned to yourself and your body. Even if the facilitator is telling you to do something or not do something, check in with yourself and see what resonates. And sometimes that's your mind saying, yeah, you can't do this, or this is too hard, or it's not, you know. And in those moments, you go, okay, can I take one more breath? Okay, yeah, I can. And then sometimes you listen to the mind and it, and you stop, but that's still a learning process for you. And it's to remember. And so, yeah. So I guess the first piece of advice is always listen to your body and attune to what it needs. And the second piece is that you can always do it again.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to be this one and only experience.
Yeah. That's yeah. Thanks so much for that. I actually went to a breathwork ceremony in the middle of last month. And I had done sort of breathwork sessions before, but it was in a room full of yoga teachers. So it wasn't really, I feel like they were able to control it a little bit more. But this one was advertised to the general public, and I was part of this, but I just started uncontrollably weeping, and I hadn't cried in a long time. And you hear like screaming, you hear, so that's actually what triggered me. I heard a really, really loud scream, and I genuinely got a little bit afraid. And that seemed to trigger some unprocessed emotion in me. And then it moved on to, I lost my dad a couple of years ago, and I feel like I haven't processed that properly. So that brought me there, and I was kind of working through that. And then I felt a bit raw for the next couple of days.
100% And I think that's the beauty of doing it in community, is that someone else's release allows you to then express your emotion too. And I remember coming home one day from a session, and it was like there was a lot of moaning and crying and release. And I thought, I don't know if I'm like effed up, are we in our society that we need to come into a dark space and breathe together to release our emotions. And so it's amazing that it's there for us, that we have that, but that we've come to this place where it feels unsafe to express and to be with our emotions. And to be in community with them outside of that. So I think, you know, for me, it brings up these two different pieces, but I'm so glad that we have this experience and to be able to do that, because so much of our emotions are stored in our body. We can talk about it and talk about it and talk about it. And actually sometimes talking about it just reinforces the stuckness of the feeling. So to be able to have that emotional release. But yeah, we definitely feel tender afterwards. How do you feel now?
I feel like I'm a little bit lighter. It was about a month ago. I was going to go there every month. I was going to go this month as well. But then I was like, I don't know if it's too close to the last one. So I was just a little bit concerned about that. Now I will go back again. And I want to try one of your ceremonies as well. So, but I would say I feel like I processed something. And for a big thing for me was actually feeling emotion for the first time in a long time. Like I was dead inside for many years. But I know it's a horrible way to describe yourself, but I was numb. And I couldn't reconnect with my emotions, and it was probably just a little bit too much for me to start processing emotions out of nowhere.
So I guess maybe that's the third piece, which is, so the first one is listen to your own body. The second one is, what did we say? Oh, you can, less is more. You can always go back. And the third one truly though is, if there is emotion that's coming up, allow it to surface, allow it to come through. And it's sometimes it's hard to titrate how much comes out if you're in that kind of space. But I wonder if, you know, if you hadn't had that experience and if you said, okay, I'm done now, that you would probably, I mean, there's nothing wrong with however you choose to do that. It'll all happen at some point. But I think it's a really beautiful way to come together in community and heal together. So I think we've become so isolationist in our lives.
Would you say it's, probably better for someone beginning to do a one-to-one, or would it be better, or does it make a difference if it's one-on-one or in the class?
I don't know. It's a good, it's a really great question, because if you've never done it before, being in a group allows you to see what others are doing too, and what the possibilities could be. But having a one-to-one, if you're uncertain, might be nice, because it helps to allay your fears, because you know the facilitator is with you. So again, I don't know if there's any right or wrong. I think I've tried to take those words out of my vocabulary in my life. There's just choices that we're going to make, and we're making the best ones with what we know at the time. So I don't think you can go wrong. I do wonder though, you know, when you said that thing, like it was a lot, like, and I have had someone walk out of a breath circle before because someone else's emotional experience was activating for her.
Right.
But what was really interesting about that is, you know, she was talking about not being able to breathe, and because the sound of the person next to her reminded her of the sounds her husband was making when he was dying.
Oh wow.
And so that could have been a moment for her to sit with that and potentially move through it or, you know, she chose to leave. And so again, either one is fine. It's kind of, I think, doing what you feel is right for you.
Yeah.
So
she came up right so close to it.
She came so close, right?
Yeah, and then,
but as a facilitator, that's what I'm seeing. I'm like, you're just coming so close. Yeah. But I don't actually know. So I have to always give power back to the participant. Yeah. I can have whatever ideas I have about your experience, but truly I don't know because that's your experience.
Wow. You say that emotion is held in the body. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah. So, you know, I think in yoga classes, we talk about that all the time, you know, releasing emotions from the hips where our grief is kept, right? Like everybody knows that part. Like I'm going to do a runner's lunge and start weeping in the middle of my session. But there's a book by Bessel van der Kolk called The Body Keeps the Score. And it was interesting because he talks about being on the psychiatry ward and seeing the patients there in these positions. And, you know, where sometimes with their hands are up or like they're shielding themselves. And when you go to their patient files, they, you know, there's like a note about an assault or, you know, so there is this position that that body was stuck in because we're still in that moment or in that space. But even like, you know, when you talk to people about getting hit in sensitive places, everyone goes, oh, like you can almost feel it. And when we experience emotion as well, the actual, you know, when people say, oh, like I was so sad that my body hurt, and these physical manifestations, it's our mind and our body are so interconnected.
Right?
So, and we can show you, like I can, so let's, we can do a quick example of how our mind and our body are connected. So let's do this one. So if you're listening, you can do it as well.
Good.
So it's that connection between how our mind and our body remembers. Okay. So I'm going to get you to close your eyes. And then I'm going to ask you to recall a memory that on a scale of 1 to 10, where 10 is the worst thing ever, is not a 10. So around a 5, 6, or a 7, something that was very embarrassing, created a lot, potentially a lot of shame when you think about it or think about it in the past. And it was kind of embarrassing. And I want you to imagine who was there, what it felt like, what was said or done or not done. And then I'm going to ask you to kind of take note of that. And then I invite you to call a different memory, a happy one, where it was a lot of joy and happiness, and imagine who was there, what it felt like, what was happening, what was the weather like. Okay. And then when you're ready, you can come back to the, open your eyes and come back to the room, as it were.
Well, it didn't take long for me to find memories.
Yeah. And what did you notice about how you felt? Like, how did it impact your body?
I felt a kind of hollowness in my chest. And that was for the embarrassing memory. And then for the happy memory, I remember putting my arms up in the air, and my arm, I felt like that's what I was going to do.
Okay.
It's interesting.
So those, you know, like we are activating that fight or flight system. So it makes sense to me, you know, and the first one that you can, probably, my guess is potentially maybe your heart rate was increasing a little bit. Mm-hmm. For some of you that are listening, or sometimes people will say like their fists would clench up. Yeah. Yeah. And then there was a small smile on your face when you had the happy memory. It was just a little bit, but it was there.
Oh, I had no idea you were watching.
Yeah. Yeah. So, right. So like these two things are connected. And so these pieces of information are stored in our body. So you can imagine that if we've talked about something, and we don't also then process it somatically, sometimes it's hard to let it go. Mm-hmm. So it's why talk therapy often isn't enough on its own, because there's actually a somatic remembering as well that we want to tap into and let go of. That's still protecting us in some ways. Yeah.
What does a buildup of unprocessed emotion sort of present like?
Anxiety, depression, right? Sometimes eczema, physical ailments, like feeling heavy, lethargic, tired, all of those things. Like those are some of the physical manifestations that, you know, often like with chronic illness, we see that as well as a result of built up emotional suppression too.
Yeah, that's actually interesting that you say that, because I'm recovering from chronic fatigue syndrome. And I mean, I said it earlier in the podcast that I had stale emotions that were there. So I'm wondering to see, because I am slowly starting to recover. I'm just wondering now if I can expect to see a faster recovery now than processing some of those old emotions.
Well, I'm a bit hesitant to say anything.
I can be a bit hopeful. Yeah.
Yeah. But I do think that the more we release, the easier it becomes, because your capacity becomes greater.
Yeah. Right?
It's almost like, you know, when you're if you go for a hike, and then those people that put on the 20-pound packs to get the extra weight, and then you take off the pack and it feels like you're bounding up the mountain.
Right. Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It's a little bit like that. Right. Yeah. You're just taking off that weight, which gives you that little bit more capacity to fly a bit freer.
Yeah. Wow. But yeah, I can certainly get behind that. Mm-hmm. So guide me through what would happen in a one-to-one session.
So in a one-to-one session, we would initially have a bit of a conversation about what your hopes were, your intentions, what you might want to let go of or bring more in. And then the session usually follows a pretty typical pattern, which is there'll be a settling in and then coming into your breath. So noticing where the breath is landing as it is, and then starting to breathe deeper. And that can be as deep as you can, because for some people, belly breathing can feel very unsafe. Mm-hmm. So in the last breathwork circle that I did, we had somebody who, and it was interesting because I was sitting with her and kind of noticing we were trying to find that wave of breath. And that's what we're trying to do in that first part. And she really couldn't breathe into her belly, and breathing into her belly actually activated her nervous system to the point where she was feeling quite faint and dizzy and on the verge of a panic attack. Right. So really we just want to kind of notice where the breath is landing. And then can we find this wave of this breathing into the belly, the chest, and then dumping out the exhale. And then there's usually just a buildup with the music. So the music's a key component of the breathwork practice as well, because it's music brings out so many emotions for people. And so depending on what that particular session is about, I will choose different music. And then at that point, it's just the buildup. So it's the continuous breathing, open mouthed, looped breathing, no pause at the top, no pause at the bottom. And we're just breathing and activating our system, noticing the sensations coming. Sometimes you might experience tingling or, cold mouth, or
what was it called with the hands?
The hand tetany. So when your hands lock up, right? So the physiological explanation is because of the off gassing and this carbon dioxide oxygen exchange. The spiritual one is because there is something stuck that needs releasing. And I think there's I think there's value to both, but sometimes I think things are actually that physiological body reaction. And then you'll, and then at that point you're on this journey where you need to decide how you're going to lean in and mm-hmm. where you're going to lean back in these moments. And then with some journeys, there'll be like a manufactured scream, like an opportunity to like really let out that emotion. Okay. Sometimes I do that and sometimes I don't. It kind of depends on the group and the intention of the mm-hmm. circle. And so there'll be like this build up to the breath and, you know, the facilitator will probably also be kind of coaching that along, like mm-hmm. bringing up the anger, the pain, the grief, and really trying to kind of create this coaching. It's almost like a sports coach going, yeah, you can do it, you know, right, like right. do more.
Some breathing.
Yeah, the bro breathing, 100%.
Yeah.
And then it kind of culminates in this massive release. Mm-hmm. And there's still opportunity, of course, for you to release before or after, because not right. everyone's always releasing at the same time. And then there's like a come down as well. Sometimes mm-hmm. there'll be a second release, and then there's this kind of parasympathetic part of it where we allow our body to rest and come into some sort of equilibrium.
Yeah. And talk me through the integration phase. So you've showed up, you've done a one-to-one breathing session. Mm-hmm. You had a massive emotional release. What would a client come back and say, ever since I've done that, I've blah, blah, blah?
Yeah, yeah. That's such a great question, because I think that this is the problem with the circles and the plant medicine mm-hmm. is that I almost feel like it's become the next dopamine chase, that we're doing it mm-hmm. to have the experience, but we forget that the experience is just one part of a bigger process.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we can take your example, mm-hmm. you know, I had all of this grief and I experienced it. And then we'd probably just talk about, well, what does that mean to you? How does that change things for mm-hmm. you? What will that create? What does that space now create for you? So sometimes, you know, I've had experiences where it feels like my great aunt is coming in, and she's just like, you know, I don't know, like in Asia, they have these like brooms, these hand brooms. And it was just like, she was just like brooming off the top of my energy field. Oh, wow. It was really beautiful. And so for me, I'm like, okay, well, what's the piece there that I want to take from that? Well, it was, there's this support, this clearing, this cleansing, and this moment of like opening and capacity that happens. Like, mm-hmm. okay, so if I'm having to clear in that moment, perhaps I want to add some more grounding and some more clearing during my day. Mm-hmm. And then I would look and say, how does that change things for me? Or what capacity does this create for me? Mm-hmm. And then for some people, you know, I had one client that came and she relived a past trauma, past sexual abuse. And mm-hmm. in her breathwork session, she was able to regain her power and mm-hmm. change the story and say, stop.
Yeah.
And so from that moment on, she brought that small version of her that didn't have power back into her body,
wow.
created some power, and that then changed how she interacted with all the people in her life and where mm-hmm. she held her boundaries and what she was willing to tolerate and how she was going to make her way forward. So yeah, like there is these moments of reflection that are required afterwards to say, well, what does this mean now? How does this change things for me?
Yeah. Oh, thanks so much for sharing. Like you said, I have my own example, so I kind of see as we go what happens for me, but I don't know.
Well, and I think that's really powerful, which is I've had an experience, mm-hmm. but I don't know exactly what that means, but I'm going to keep an eye out on it, or I'm just going to, you know, just a little bit of observation, because I, you know, people will come in and say, oh my gosh, it's like 10 years of therapy in like one session. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes people will come in and be like, well, I had an experience, but I don't know what that means. And, and I think that's the thing, like, you know, when we're ready for change, it's like when we're ready for that haircut. And like yesterday, your hair was fine, but now you've decided that you need a haircut, and all of a sudden your hair looks like the worst, like it's ever. Like, but there's really been no, there's no difference.
I can't relate, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's fair enough. As I started that example, I'm like, well, all right. But it's, you know, it's our perspective that mm-hmm. is shifting.
Yeah.
So to know to hold space for change is really important as well.
Yeah. Wow. And what about the breathing instructions themselves? Is there mm-hmm. a right or wrong way to do it? The reason I'm asking this is because this was another breathwork session that I had done mm-hmm. years and years ago with the one with the yoga teachers. And I had sort of an emotional release then.
Mm-hmm.
But they had the breathing was structured very differently. There was, I think, 5 or 6 different sequences of breathing that they were guiding people through. Yeah. And then the second one was just, the woman just said, just breathe in through your mouth and out through your mouth, and that's all you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing happened. So it was just something I was wondering about, you know, what was happening.
Yeah. So there are lots of different styles of breath. And actually, one of my plans for 2024 is to offer 2 offerings. One is going to be called Slow Breath, and the other one is, I think,
okay,
I'm toying with the idea of Breath Express. So, you know, like in that first one, there is this attunement to the body, feeling safe in the body, allowing for your breath to deepen and to even feel what that feels like to have a deeper breath.
Okay.
And the express breathing is for those bigger somatic releases where you're having that kind of bigger, better, faster, more.
Yeah.
So this is kind of for me where I feel, I'm not sure how I feel about it, because I wonder if the bro breathing kind of falls into that bigger, better, faster, more sort of space where actually we need to slow down a little bit.
Yeah.
So that's something I've been thinking about. But either way, whether you're breathing slower or breathing fast, it's like meditation. You can have really big emotional releases in these meditation practices, and you're not moving fast or moving hard. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but fast breathing or holotropic breathing has been around for forever. So I think it's really about saying there's a lot of different things that are available to us. It's whatever our own, attunement is to that particular practice that's going to matter.
So I just wanted to, check in again with is there specifically any dangers associated with doing this breath work?
Yeah. So if you're doing this conscious connected breath work, this sort of fast breathing, where you're activating your nervous system, you really don't want to be doing it if you have heart problems, if you're pregnant.
Yes.
If you are actively experience a psychotic episode, epilepsy.
Yeah.
Those are some things that you're definitely going to want to check and do something different.
Right.
And that's really where the slow breath comes in.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So that's not going to hurt you in that sense. So when you, look at, breath, and, when they started looking at breath in the 1930s and 40s, people were breathing about 6 to 10 breaths a minute.
Okay.
And we're breathing about 15 to 20 now. So, so like you can imagine that this is like this, we're just like in this constant hyperventilated state. And the other thing that we know is that we're also breathing quite shallow in our chest. Mm-hmm. So if you're listening to this podcast or watching this podcast right now, you can just check in with yourself. Just notice without changing anything, because obviously as soon as you say notice your breath, everyone breathes deep. But just notice where your breath lands. And for some people, it's going to be in the chest. Some people, it might be a little bit further down. And some people, it's going to be all the way in the belly.
Yeah.
And what we want to be doing is bringing that breath all the way into the belly. So even if you're experiencing some of these other things, you can still focus on changing your breath in order to support easier living. And when I say that, all I mean is that your nervous system is going to be a little bit more downregulated, which gives you capacity to handle things. So your prefrontal cortex is more online, which allows you to, you know, stop those ruminating thoughts or cycling into and spiraling into the worst case scenario, for example.
Yeah.
So you can always, there's always something that you can do, but you may want to stay away from those really activating breathwork sessions.
Okay, so if you mentioned if someone has had a recent psychotic episode or any psychotic episode.
Yeah, I would say like recent or any. Like you just want to just check in because you don't want to activate something and then.
Oh, I see. So it's about activating
it. It's about the, you're coming into quite a altered state of consciousness if you're really going for it, right?
Yeah.
You think about people who practice holotropic breathing and therefore like 2-3 hours, like that's quite an intense state of altered states of consciousness.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're trying to stay grounded in this three-dimensional reality, yeah. then doing that kind of breath work may not serve you as well mm-hmm. as doing something slower and deeper where you're actually attuning to your body so that your mind and your body are in the same place at the same time.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit more about holotropic breathing, because I think that's a word that's kind of on the up. People are starting to understand or hear about it a little more. Mm-hmm. And actually that YouTube video that that breathwork thing that I was talking about earlier, that was holotropic breathing. Mm-hmm. And I thought I was doing it for about an hour and a half, but it was 40 minutes. Mm. And they also say that you shouldn't go beyond an hour and a half on your own mm-hmm. because, you know, you're not going to be in a typical state.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, there's some people call it like conscious connected breathing mm-hmm. or holotropic. I mean, I think there's different places that it's kind of come from or different philosophies or, you know, really when I think of it, it's all based on ancient traditions and ancient mm-hmm. wisdom traditions. Mm-hmm. And we're just placing different names and branding various breathwork yeah. practices and schools that come and just like talking about it in different ways. But really, it's exactly what you're saying, right? It's bringing us into an altered state of consciousness. Yeah. So.
It's just, I can remember because I told the woman that was hosting the other breathwork session, I told her about that video and she was like, yeah, no, I would never leave someone on their own to do it. Mm-hmm. And like this person is leaving that on the internet and anyone could watch it and they could end up in a, you know, a psychotic episode or something. And
totally.
Yeah. So yeah. I just think it took a lot of, balls to put that up on the internet, I think.
Well, and that's the thing, right? Like, as facilitators who are putting things up there, I think we do have a responsibility mm-hmm. to either be very clear about the potential dangers of, mm-hmm. or potential experiences you might be having, but also as the consumer to be very cognizant of what you're allowed or what you're entering into, what mm-hmm. you're putting your body and your mind into. I think the responsibility goes both ways.
Yeah. If you were leading one of your breathwork sessions, do you have a limit as to what shouting or?
I don't.
No. Yeah. Has there ever been a situation where you think maybe someone is not doing so good? Or?
Oh yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah. So that happens where it's, you know, so in a session, especially if there's more than actually in all sessions, I always have someone that's assisting.
Yeah.
And so that way you can, you know, someone that is having experience can still be attended to. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that experience is like, that doesn't look good.
Yeah.
But I'm going to go there to support, be an empathic witness to support this process. Mm-hmm. And here, some of the things that I'm looking for is this not good because they're having the experience, but they're almost through it. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, it's actually coming up to a release. Mm-hmm. Is it that they're sort of losing control and, you know, you want to bring them back? And yeah. So I had one participant a few weeks ago. He went into it so fast, right? So here's the other thing with these breathwork sessions is that a facilitator might tell you to go in and go hard, mm-hmm. but you're going to be there for 40 minutes. So you want to create something that's sustainable for yeah. you. So that's always the first key. But he went really hard, really fast.
Okay.
And so from a physiological perspective, right? Like it was too much for yeah. his body and he couldn't move. He felt like his voice was stuck. He was like in extreme tetany. And okay. I'm like, we're not breathing through that anymore. Now mm-hmm. we're going to stop breathing. We're going to come onto our side. I'm going to sit with you, yeah. You know, until you come out of it. Cause I know that you will once you start, mm-hmm. Breathing in and out through your nose. Sometimes, yeah, like you will pull somebody out of it. 9 times out of 10, they'll come afterwards and say to you, I was so close to yeah. releasing something and then you stopped me mad at you, right? So I think part of that process is releasing your control and allowing the wisdom of the body to take over mm-hmm. because the body's not going to go somewhere where it doesn't want to go. It will bring you out pretty quick.
You say the wisdom of the body. Can you elaborate on that?
So, you know, when you're, it's like the gut feeling.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, I think that maybe like that might be a good example, the gut feeling of, or where you're like, yeah, I can go a little bit more, or I can't do this anymore, or this feels good, or that doesn't feel good. Yeah. So I think it's really about that. And, you know, it's, and we put so much language on everything, but for me, I've really reduced it to, does this feel okay? Yes or no.
So
that's kind of where, and then if it's no, okay, what doesn't feel okay? So, and if it still feels okay, then I'm going to keep breathing.
Yeah. So there's kind of no like moment where you'd be sure that, oh, what I'm doing now is might be causing damage, or should I push through just so I can process that emotion, which you, it's kind of a blurry area.
I think it is a little bit blurry. I don't think there's a hard and fast rule. I think about it a little bit like an orgasm, right? It's like you're just, you're right there. You're on the edge. And like, and then you like, what is the choice that you're going to make about you, there is a little bit of letting go of control that needs to happen, to kind of come over that edge. And it's a little bit like that. I think that a lot of people talk about it. And my own experience is that it's like you're standing on this cliff edge and you're looking down. Am I going to jump? Am I going to let go and allow myself to have this experience? Okay. Am I ready for that?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to keep that in mind next time I'm doing not the female orgasm bit, but just coming up to it. Because, you know, having done a breathwork session that's sparked an emotional awakening in me, I'm surely keen to keep kind of returning to that. And, yeah, how often would you say would be a good kind of clip to do them? Once a month, once every 2 months?
So some people will have done them like every day for a few days to get rid of some stuff. And some people will do once a month. I remember when I first started, I did like one and I'm like, I think I'm done for now. Like my body was exhausted and I could have gone back and probably done another one and gotten rid of some stuff, but I was like, I think I need to rest.
Yeah.
So again, it's always tuning back into what you need. 'Cause for somebody, one is enough for their lifetime because they got all they needed in that one experience. Yeah. And then for others, you know, they do come back every week. And actually I often use them now, not so much for processing the deeper stuff, but just like literally, it's like a workout from the week, like an emotional release of all the things that happened in the week.
Yeah.
I remember one time my oldest had some gum surgery and then she came out of it and the anesthesia didn't sit with her well and she like vomited. And so there was like blood everywhere. And I thought I was okay with it. Like I was using all my best tools, breathing deeply in the moment, being grounded and holding space for her to have her experience. And I thought I felt fine. And then I went to a breathwork session that night and I was like, oh, I'm not fine. Right. and I really let out a few, like, I think those are probably the most blood curdling screams I've ever let out in my life.
Okay. And that was directly associated.
It really was. 'Cause then I was like, oh, I feel fine now.
Wow. Right.
So I had been holding something without even really realizing holding it.
I didn't even consider that was a possibility. Like, I thought it was fine, but there was something that was happening actually.
But my fight or flight system was activated, right? It created energy in my body. Mm. And that's, you know, that tension that we feel, you know, should I do this? Should I not do this? I want to do this. I don't want to do this. Oh my gosh, there's this danger. There isn't this danger.
Yeah.
Our fight or flight system is activating. And so it is creating energy in our body because our heart rate is up, our blood is pumping, our blood vessels have constricted, you know, like all of these things have happened. So there is that sort of body memory that is still there. And so like sometimes people will say, you know, when they go work out after a particularly stressful day, they feel so much better. It's because they're releasing and discharging that energy from their system.
Do you think it's like if you continued going over and over, it's probably a tough question, but do you think the older the trauma is, would the body give that more priority or more recent trauma?
I don't know. I can't tell. The body's going to give you what the body's going to give you, right? Yeah, yeah. And you can set intentions, you know, before, like, I really want to process this thing.
Right, right.
And for sure, you will bring up some of that. But I often like to go into it without any intention other than to experience whatever needs to be experienced in this moment. Because, like, in my mind, I'm like, I don't think I'm working through anything right now.
Yeah.
Which I'm like, pretty happy about. Yeah. It's not that there aren't things to work on, but there's always something, but there isn't anything so big right now for me. Oh, I was like, that's a lie, Natasha. But it's different. It's more about, like, future, right? Like, so what are these things that I want for the future and how I want to vision the next little while, both for my life, my career, and all of these things. But in terms of the past stuff, I mean, sure, it'll all surface, but sometimes it's really clear what we're processing, right? And sometimes it's not. And so it's totally fair to just, like, go into a situation and say, like, whatever comes, comes. And the beauty of that is that it's stuck, it comes to the surface, and you release it, and you don't even have to talk about it. You don't always have to find meaning around it either. I could just be crying, and it's okay that all I need to know is that it's something that was there, and now it's not.
Yeah.
I don't even need to know what it is.
Yeah. I had no idea at first, but then as I was led on, my dad just popped into my head.
Yeah.
And, it was quite an intimate moment. It was like a conversation and a grieving at the same time. So not even talking about it now.
But that you allowed yourself to even have the experience was really
because
powerful.
I didn't go anywhere near that.
Yeah.
That's something I locked away. Mm. Yeah. So it was, I think when I put the lid on, I probably put a lid on over everything.
Yes. Yeah. That often happens.
God, this is like a therapy session itself.
I'll send you my bill later.
Yeah, sounds good. As we wrap up, what would be the main takeaway you would give someone that's interested in starting their breathwork journey?
So I think considering why, like, what is it that interests you about it?
Yeah.
What do you hope for your practice? Mm-hmm. And that, I think, the question is super important because I think, you know, I hear so many people saying, oh, I thought this will be the thing that cures me, or will be the thing that heals me. Mm. And to remember that those are just tools. You have to make the change. You have to do the healing. Mm-hmm. We use these tools. So one is to not outsource your power to the tool. Mm-hmm. So what is it that you hope for with the breath work? What is it that you want to uncover? And then I think it's really just about trying it and giving yourself the freedom to try different things and to have different experiences and for maybe having an experience in the very first session, but maybe not, you know, and I think dropping expectations about the experience is really helpful.
Yeah. Wow. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks so much for coming on. It was a really good conversation. If people want to get in touch or contact, what do they do?
Yeah, so you can connect with me on either my website at digdeepcounseling.com or you can follow me on Instagram at digdeepcounseling. It's all the same. So I'll post workshops in both places, but I also have my one-to-one offerings on my website as well.
That's great.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, Natasha, thank you so much.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
All righty.
So there we go. That was the interview with Natasha. Wasn't it amazing? She's such a wealth of knowledge and a fountain of insights, and she's just got a real good grasp on what it is to know about breathwork and meditation. Now, in the theme of the podcast, this does apply to interviews as well, where I will apply how I use this in my own life so that we can build some actionable steps for you. So what really piqued my interest in the conversation was how Natasha said that you come right up to facing a demon or challenge or whatever is in your way, in the way of your personal development. And then you have the chance to process that. And that really got me thinking that I was going to try that in one of my breathwork sessions. So I sat down and did a breathwork. I have my struggle this time was I have a strange belief about money and that I'm working through my attitude towards it, and just to make myself know that I'm more deserving of receiving money for what I do. So I did. I applied that struggle into my breathwork and came up to a point where I could actually, the usual belief system wasn't in place. I wasn't saying the same things. I'm not worthy about money or whatever. What Natasha said would happen happened. I cleared the big space, and then in that big space, I was able to reframe how I spoke to myself about money. And after I got out of the meditation and it was all done, I felt that if I was thinking the same beliefs, they weren't, not that they weren't there, but they didn't quite have the same negative effects. And I just thought that was an amazing thing. So I invite you to try out a breathwork meditation. Go into it with your own personal belief about something that you're struggling with. Do the breathwork. See how it feels for you to work through that. Okay, so that's this week's episode, and I will see you in the next one. Thanks so much for listening today. Remember, the path to overcoming challenges like the one in this podcast are ongoing and deeply personal. The techniques and insights we discussed today are just the beginning. To further support your journey and to explore more resources, I encourage you to visit our website at www.freedomandclarity.com/meditations. Here you'll find a wealth of online resources, courses, and guided sessions designed to deepen your practice and enhance your journey towards personal success and inner peace. Whether you're looking to build upon what we've explored today or embark on new avenues of self-discovery, these resources are tailored to help you every step of the way. Thank you once again for tuning in. Remember, each breath is a step towards greater clarity and freedom. Until next time, keep breathing deeply, meditate with intention, and embrace your journey with an open heart and mind. Again, that's www.freedomandclarity.com/meditations to continue your transformative journey. Be well, stay mindful, and I will connect with you again on our next episode. Thank you.